Welcome. This is the Woodbury Church of Christ Sermon Podcast. We're glad that you tuned in, and if you'd like to know more about our church, you can find out all the information at woodburychurch.org. Or we'll see you some Sunday. Sundays at 10 a.m. Looking forward to it.
Well, years ago, I met an atheist that I think was an atheist for the same reason people get face tattoos. Now, this isn't to say there's not good reasons to be an atheist, and I bet you that's something you've never heard at a church before. There's good reasons to be an atheist. But he was one of those guys where I think he just wanted to stand out. He wanted to have something that was different than the crowd, and so he claimed this belief. He had a buddy that was also a mutual friend of mine who this mutual friend wanted us to meet because the friend wanted me to convince the atheist that Jesus was real, God was real, all that. And it's kind of a funny feature when you're in my line of work, you do get that sort of thing a lot. They're like, oh, I have somebody I need you to talk to because I want you to answer all their questions. I want you to convince them to believe. And, you know, it's never very effective because they don't know me. Why would they want to talk to me? That sort of thing. But anyway, I agreed. And so I kind of anticipated that this could be a debate. I knew that that might happen, so I was brushing up on all my arguments for God. So I enter his house, and he's in an armchair. He doesn't get up. I think he's kind of like ready to fight mode too, because the friend said I was coming over. And, you know, I didn't want to fight. That's not what meeting anybody's about or trying to convince anybody of God is about. It shouldn't be a fight. But he seemed like he was kind of geared up for a fight, so I walked in, and he was sitting in an armchair, and I'm like, oh, nice to meet you. And he kind of crossed his arms and leaned back, and he's like, you don't believe in that garbage about Mary being a virgin, do you? And I was totally caught off guard, because that's not the argument I thought he was going to go with. I wasn't prepared for that one. And the thing that I thought was amusing about it, and I was like, well, that's your struggle? You think the biggest problem in the Bible, the biggest problem to belief is that Jesus' mom might have been lying? That's what you think? I wanted to say, but I didn't. I wanted to say I could give you 100 better reasons not to believe than that one. And that wouldn't have been a very effective way to get him to believe, to give him more ammunition. But it was such a strange thing. And it illustrates the personal nature of what compels or inhibits belief. It's very personal. So for you, the reasons that you believe in God may be drastically different than anybody else in the room. You may have completely different ideas and realities and experiences, and they, maybe they lead to the same conclusions, but they all come from different places. Belief is a strange thing. It is a strange thing. Despite what Journey says, you don't really just stop believing. And so you don't help someone to believe by telling them, don't stop. That's not how it works. We're starting a new series called Elements. And the idea behind this series is that sometimes we just don't stop and really assess the essence of our faith, the foundational components of what's going on inside our theology, inside our brains. I don't even know that we think in those terms. I don't know when the last time very many of us stopped and thought, why do I believe or what do I believe? But that's what we're going to try to explore in this series is the elements, the essence of our faith. Working in my line of work, I've heard a lot of people that were told you just need to believe. And so they came to church or they were with a friend, you just need to believe. And the reality is that's just it's not how it works. It's not how it works. We tend to believe in God, if we believe in God, we tend to believe in God for three reasons. We tend to believe in God for three reasons: social, personal, and intellectual. And what we're going to do is we're just going to kind of briefly explain and examine these reasons for belief in God, and then next week we're going to explore some other stuff related to these ideas. But I want us to just understand when we say we believe in God, where this comes from, where this derives from. So the first one is social. A lot of us, a lot of you believe in God because you were raised in a church, in a family that believed in God. That's sort of the why. Now, you may feel like, well, that's not really a substantial reason to, but that's the why behind it. That's where you got your belief. And in fact, I think this might be the most impactful reason for belief, but it's really the one that we're least aware of. We're just kind of raised in an environment of Christianity, and it's just there, and it's always been there, and it's just maybe we feel like always will be there. So it's our environment, it's our family, it's the people we want to identify with. But often, this approach to belief is leveled as a critique. Have you ever had someone say, or have you ever heard the argument, you know, you only believe because you were born in a family that's Christian, and that's the only reason you believe. Maybe some of you have heard that or wondered that. You've wondered, like, if I was born in some other part of the world, would I believe, or would I believe this other thing? Am I just a product of my geography? Is that all I am? You know, if I was born in, I don't know, East Lupaland or whatever, would I believe whatever they do? And that would all be all that is. And I've heard that as a critique. Patrick, you only believe because your parents were Christians. And in my case, it wasn't just my parents, it was my grandparents who were also Christians. And so I kind of didn't have a chance. My aunts and uncles and everybody, they're all just part of this swirl of Christianity that I've grown up in. I don't have a chance, right? It would be so costly to walk away from belief. So of course, momentum carries me. That's the only reason I believe, right? No, no. It feels like a solid argument to say that, but it's not. It's not. Just because you were raised in an environment that, let's say in this case, gave you the truth, maybe you can concede that to me, you were raised in a family that taught you the truth, doesn't mean that it's wrong. Of course not. Why would it mean it's wrong? Because you were raised in an environment that taught you the right thing. And here's what's crazy. When I have been given that accusation, the reality is that person who may be an atheist or maybe a non-believer or maybe believe something else, the only reason they are that is because they also didn't grow up in East Lumpaland. If they had grown up, they would believe whatever that area or that geography believes as well. It's just not a good argument to say your social environment is the only substantiation for your belief. That doesn't make it wrong. It doesn't make it right. It's just not a good argument. Paul the Apostle spoke about belief and geography in Acts chapter 17, which is kind of interesting. Belief and geography, Acts 17, verse 26, he says, he, God, marked out their appointed times in history and the boundaries of their lands. God did this so that they would seek him. In other words, and this is important, people can find God because God allows them to be in a situation that is most conducive to them finding God. I think God knew, and this is, I'm not kidding when I say this, I think God knew that I was such a dummy that I needed to be born in a Christian family where I would be spoon-fed the truth because otherwise I would not get it. And whenever God was bringing me into existence, he was like, you better give him Christian grandparents too and Christian aunts and uncles, whole Christian family, otherwise he's not going to figure it out. Because I believe that God set my appointed times and my boundaries in order that I would find him. That doesn't negate that truth. It substantiates it. It substantiates it. Now, I realize that doesn't work for everybody. I totally understand that. But that's a big portion of why we believe. It's part of the air we breathe. It's part of the cultural environment we're in. This is a huge piece. And so for a lot of you, the reason you have some sort of relationship with God, some sort of faith, is because you were, in essence, born into it or born into an environment that was conducive to it. But that's not where it ends. The other one is a lot of us believe because of some sort of personal experience, something we experienced. You guys know well that my 10-year-old son, he bookended the summer by breaking his arm. So he broke the right and then the left. Liam's a little bit of a, he's a little fearless, right? He's just got that inner, his heart is just like, let's just go do fun stuff and not worry so much about the danger. And so he was riding this thing called a rip stick. You guys ever heard of a rip stick? You know what that is? Now, what they did when they invented this thing, they said, skateboards are too safe. How could we make the probability of crashing, how could we crank that to 100%? And so the idea they came up with is like, let's just make it have two wheels instead of four, right? And let's make the middle twist. And so you're inevitably going to crash. So Liam had gotten on a ripstick, and one of his buddies got on another one and crashed, and he landed wrong and broke his arm again. And I was praying. I was like, God, I want Liam to be a little more careful, but I don't want these experiences to dampen his enthusiasm for life, right? Protect his heart, God. I don't want this to turn into a thing where he's just anxious and he's constantly worried about breaking the arm. Does that make any sense? As a dad, I wanted, there was like this push and pull thing going on, this real tension going on. And so I'm praying that, you know, it wouldn't affect his personality, it wouldn't change his heart. I'm literally praying this prayer. He got his splint on, and they kind of compress this thing with a splint. He's at the orthopedic doctor, and they wait a few days before they put the actual cast on because they want the swelling to go down. So he's in a splint, and he's walking around in a splint. He was with a couple buddies when he did it, and so when we got home from the orthopedic doctor, he wanted to go show his buddies his splint, tell them he was okay. You know, they were pretty worried about him. So, sure, go outside, and he goes down the street to where his buddies are. He's talking to them a little bit, and he doesn't come right back inside. And I'm thinking, well, I wonder what maybe he's just still talking to his buddies, but Dad, who's a little worried about the arm breaking thing, went outside to try to track him down. Guess what I found him doing? Riding his ripstick down the street in a sling from an arm he had broken on his ripstick. I'm like, Liam, what are you doing? My prayers had to change, like, all right, God, will you make him less like his dad, God, in some way? Will you protect this kid? And it's interesting because I anticipated that experience to really dampen his enthusiasm for some of these dangerous activities, and somehow it didn't. But for some people, it would have. We all live experiences, and these experiences affect us in drastically different ways. They create different results, and I don't know the psychology of that, but that's what happens. It's hard to know how similar experiences affect people differently. Some people experience blessing, and they praise God. But scriptures warn about people experiencing blessing and they forget God. Same blessing. Some praise God, some forget God. Some people experience tragedy and it drives them to faith. Some people experience the same tragedy and it drives them to say, I don't know if I can believe in a God that would allow that to happen. There's this cool story in Job. Well, it's a cool detail. The story isn't cool. Sorry, that's a bad way to characterize it. It's a tragic story in the book of Job. But in chapter 2, Job's had this awful experience. I mean, he's lost his entire family except his wife. He's lost his livelihood. He's lost all his possessions. I mean, he doesn't have anything left. And it actually says in Job chapter 2, verse 8, that he's just sitting there on the ground with a piece of broken pottery, and he's scraping himself with it because he's got these boils. Like, life is miserable. He's at the very bottom of the bottom of the bottom. This is the worst. I mean, this is a country song on steroids right here. But verse 9, it actually gets worse, believe it or not. His wife said to him, are you still maintaining your integrity in reference to his faith? Do you still believe in God? You're ridiculous, Job. You should curse God and die. So both these people are experiencing something terrible and something tragic. And Job, he replied, you are talking like a foolish woman. I appreciate that he said, you're like a foolish woman. He didn't say, you are a foolish woman. That was a very good distinction, born from years of marriage experience. You are talking like a foolish woman. Shall we accept good from God and not trouble? Both people had similar experiences, and it drove them in different directions. Isn't that interesting? So let me say this, and this is not gonna make you feel better. This is just a reality that we need to deal with. Those of you that maybe struggle with belief, or you wonder, or you're not sure, and some of your wondering has to do with personal experiences that you've had, let me just say the reality is there are other humans who've experienced much worse and still believe. Having a difficult life experience is not a requirement to not believe. It doesn't have to drive you to non-belief. I know that doesn't make anybody feel good, like, okay, so I should feel good about all the terrible things that happened in my life that have made me question God. No, I'm not saying that. I'm just telling you that other people go through things and they find a way, they find the light, they find the path toward God. It's possible. I'm just saying it's possible. It's not a contest about who has the hardest life, but your experiences don't necessitate losing faith. Nobody's do. The third reason, and we're going to spend a little bit more time talking about this. The third reason, because this is the one that gets everybody all excited and the one we can think about the most, but the third reason for belief is the intellectual. It's the stuff that happens up here in our brain. And honestly, this is probably the least good reason for belief. And you're like, wait a second, what are you talking about? The reasons to believe are the least good reasons to believe? All I'm saying by that is that these are the least convincing. If someone does not believe in God, then me sitting down and giving them a logical argument isn't going to convince them. These intellectual reasons are the things that we gather around us once we already believe. That's how this tends to work for us. But we get most excited about these. So, for example, my armchair atheist that I was talking to that kind of caught me off guard with his objection about the Virgin Mary, I doubt that he was sitting down with his Bible and he got through all the stuff in the Bible. He got through creation. He got through crossing the Red Sea. Yep, I'm all for that. Got through the sun standing still in the book of Joshua. Got through the Jericho wall falling down. I agree. And then he finally gets to the New Testament in the book of Matthew. And he's like, wait, what's this? Jesus' mother was a virgin? Unacceptable. No, that was a validation of his already formed lack of belief. He had accumulated that as to substantiate something that he already believed. And that's how all of us are. We're all that way. You believe and then you substantiate it. So some of the things I'm going to say are totally, you're going to be like, yes, I agree, 1,000%, 100, yeah, it's exactly why we believe. But it's really just a substantiation. If you're in the room and you do not believe, probably anything I'm going to say isn't going to be like, oh, now I'm convinced. Walked into church thinking one thing, left the church thinking another thing. It probably won't, but these are valuable for us to understand because we gather these ideas and they help buoy our belief in times of distress and hardship because we're like, oh, yes, I need to recall that truth. I need to recall that reality. Pascal said, he was a mathematician, but he said, I agree with him. That's why I'm showing you this. People almost invariably arrive at their beliefs not on the basis of proof, even though you think you do, but on the basis of what they find attractive. And I think that's very true. Pascal was a believer. 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 15. It's good to have reasons. Always be prepared to give an answer to everyone who asks you to give the reason for the hope that you have. But do this with gentleness and respect. By the way, we should really emphasize the gentleness and respect piece. So the belief in God, the debate, it goes back millennia. And it's always variations on the same themes. And philosophers and theologians, they come up with variations on these basic arguments. And they come up with more elegant forms of these arguments. But it's always something like, well, hey, if there is a God, then why is there evil? That's a head scratcher. Man, you would think God would just take care of it all. If there is a God, why is there evil? So therefore, there is no God. And then the theologian comes back and says, hey, why do you think anything's evil if there isn't a God? Why is there a category of evil if you don't think there's a category of good that comes from outside of us? Or a non-believer might say something like, oh, well, if there is a God, then why doesn't he stop bad things from happening to good people? That they don't deserve those bad things to happen, so therefore, there is no God. Well, if there is no God, why do you think good people deserve good things? It's just life. What does it matter? So there's these arguments, and there's all kinds of them. There's hundreds of them. You can, in fact, if you want to, and I totally encourage this, by the way. This is something that you're not going to hear said very often in a church, but totally. Go out. I have read The God Delusion by Richard Dawkins. It's a well-written book. He's kind of mean, but it's a well-written book. If you want to think about some of the arguments against faith, against religion, you should read The God Delusion. Or Christopher Hitchens, who's passed away, but he wrote a book called God Is Not Great. And let me tell you, as a little guy who works at a church, I was reading that book, and it felt so weird to be sitting in my chair reading a book called God Is Not Great. I wanted to, like, scribble out the title, like, I don't want anybody seeing me read this. God Is Not Great. Well-written book, very compelling. But, and there's lots to wrestle with there, but there's also incredibly compelling books written to substantiate faith. I mean, I just think every Christian should read anything by C.S. Lewis. Read Mere Christianity. It's so easy to read. It's just so compelling. But if that feels too old-fashioned for you, then read The Reason for God by Timothy Keller. It's a great book. Just really, really good stuff out there. So there's all kinds of substantiations. But anyway, there's this argument back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, and nothing really changes. The particulars of the argument don't really change until 1961. Things changed. Because in 1961, Soviet Russia sent a man into space. Yuri Gagarin was up in space, or first human to orbit the Earth. And he came back, and the newspapers reported, I looked, and I looked, and I looked, but I did not see God. Well, that was a different piece of information. This was the first time somebody had experienced this. And they turned this into a Soviet propaganda poster. I have a copy of it here. And this essentially translates to, there is no God. That's Yuri, you know, I'm looking around. I don't see God. Well, what do you say to that? None of us have been to space. We can't argue with him. C.S. Lewis heard that, and his response I thought was pretty good. He's like, that's funny. That's a little like Hamlet going into the top of his castle and saying, I didn't see Shakespeare. Now, if you want, if you're looking for a Cliff Notes version for the reasons, the intellectual reasons, let me just give you just, this is just barely scratching the surface, but maybe this will help. Maybe this will give you a little something to handle, hold on to. I want you to think about Immanuel Kant's tombstone. Immanuel Kant was a German philosopher, but on his tombstone is inscribed these words: two things fill the mind with ever new and increasing admiration and awe, the more often and steadily we reflect upon them, the starry heavens above me and the moral law within me. Kant here looks like he's making two claims, but he's actually making three claims. And I just want to briefly, just super briefly, walk through these with you. The starry heavens above me. We have Hubble Space Telescope images, and then last year we have the James Webb Telescope images. Mind-blowing. I've got one here, too. This is called the Pillars of Creation. I mean, it's unbelievable. Just light years wide explosions. Now, I get that many people can look at this image and be like, ah, it doesn't do anything for my belief. But I'm just telling you, me as a human, me as a non-astronomer, when I look up at the stars, there are billions, gazillions, trillions of stars. And then come to find out, the astronomers tell us, well, actually, there's billions of galaxies. And then some astronomers are like, actually, there might be billions of universes. And you're just like, my brain cannot contain that knowledge. And it doesn't mean that directly there must be a God because we've got these incredible images. It just means that, hey, it's not unreasonable to think that all of this came from a creator that is infinitely bigger and broader and more creative than any of us are. It's not unreasonable to think that. I have another picture here. This is also from the James Webb Telescope. And this is just a shot of in this picture, there are thousands of galaxies, not thousands of stars. In this shot, there are thousands of galaxies, of millions of stars. It's mind-blowing. Does this mean, James Webb saw the picture, I'm a believer now? No, it's just not unreasonable to believe. And Immanuel Kant would say, the more I think about this kind of stuff, the more it substantiates the reality that there is a creator God. That's all he's saying. And in fact, Kant said this without the advantage of the James Webb Space Telescope. He said that. But so did David in Psalm 8, 3 through 5. When I consider your heavens, the work of your fingers, the moon and the stars, which you have set in place, what is mankind? Man, why are you mindful of them? Human beings that you care for them. It blows my mind. Some of you are like, wait a second. You're talking about belief in God, but you're quoting scripture to substantiate? That doesn't really make sense, Patrick. No, I'm just saying that scripture itself points to the same thing philosophers have been pointing to. Do you want some sort of evidence to give your mind something to grab onto? Look up. Just look up. Look up. Gagarin, by the way, actually, the I went to space and know God guy, this is pretty interesting. He died in a suspicious plane accident about 6 years after orbiting the Earth. It was one of those things, Soviet Russia, you're just kind of like, what's going on over there? He was, anyway, the particulars are pretty interesting. Decades later, well after Soviet Russia was gone and there wasn't any concern about repercussions, Gagarin's friend said he never said that. That was total Soviet propaganda. In fact, one of his best friends, who was a journalist, published a book. I mean, you could look it up on Wikipedia right now if you want. I don't care. He said, in fact, Gagarin should be remembered for a completely different words. An astronaut cannot be suspended in space and not have God in his mind and his heart. It's pretty cool. Pretty cool. Science and faith are not in conflict. Science tells us what, and faith maybe gives us some ideas as to why. But the other thing that Kant says, he talks about the moral law within me. The moral law within me. Me and Liam were looking for something to watch, and we decided to watch this documentary about a volcano. I didn't realize at the beginning of the documentary that it would be pretty intense, and so Liam didn't sleep super well that night. If you know what I'm talking about, this is a documentary on Netflix, and it's about this island off the coast of New Zealand that had an active volcano, and they took tourists to it. You're like, yeah, it sounds fun. And Liam has told me he'll never go on a tour to an active volcano after this, so maybe he's learning something with all those broken arms. But the crazy story is this volcano erupts. There's tourists on the island when it erupts. That's kind of crazy, right? But what's amazing is that it didn't kill them all. Some of them it did, but it didn't kill them all. And so there's this rescue mission to get to the island. There was a boat that had just left. They saw the explosion. They went back. And you're like, whoa, can you imagine going back to a volcanic island? But about 20 miles offshore, a couple of helicopter pilots, they see what's going on. They don't have anything to do with anybody. They don't know anybody there. They get in their helicopters, and they fly to the island. They fly into the explosion, the clouds and the dust and particles, and they land, and they find people, and they help them, and they're trying to pour water on their burns and all this, and you're just listening to these guys talk about the story. You're just like, wow, what would I do in that kind of situation? But here's what's crazy. The New Zealand government, their official response was not to send a rescue mission. And the reason is because it was too dangerous. So they were thinking, logically, we cannot send anybody because there's a good chance that they will die. But then these two guys, these helicopter pilots, the guys you want to be like in the story, they fly into the volcano, they rescue 7 or 8 people, and they get them out of there. And you can just tell in this documentary, they interview these guys, and they're just so angry at the response to the government because there's two conflicting worldviews at play here. One is, hey, logically, humanly speaking, it doesn't make sense to send more people because they're going to die. But the other response is, hey, we need to put our lives at risk for someone else. And when you think about those two scenarios, maybe this divides the room. I don't know. But I'll tell you what, I identify with those helicopter pilots. I don't know if that's what I would do, but I feel like they were right. Now, why? Because there is something built inside of us that says it is good, it is moral to risk one's life for the sake of another human being. There's something in us. It's not like this documentary or these helicopter pilots were trying to prove the existence of God. There's just something in us, and I think that they were right. But I told you that Kant said three things: the starry heavens above me, the moral law within me, and then he wrote increasing admiration and awe. And here's this is really crucial. This is really important. Science can explain that we're seeing bazillions of galaxies millions of miles away, but it cannot tell us why looking at that creates a sense of awe in us. It can't do that. Science can explain why we could have an orchestra and how the sound waves work and how loud it is and how dragging a bow over some strings makes this noise and it resonates within the chamber of this cello or whatever. It can explain all that, but science can't explain why hearing that orchestra play gives me goosebumps. Science can explain why the folks singing Handel's Messiah, and as they get to the Hallelujah chorus, they were shouting out, Hallelujah, he will reign forever and ever. They can explain how that works in the room and the acoustics of a theater, but they cannot explain, as the performers sang those lines, why the crowd spontaneously stood to their feet and erupted in applause during the performance and have done so for the last several hundred years when that's performed. Science can't explain what that does to the human heart. And so Kant calls that increasing admiration and awe. We all know, we can sit here and know that the logical decision from the New Zealand government not to send people into harm's way was the quote-unquote right decision. But we also can admire and respect the guys that did it. We can think that they're brave and think that they deserve all the accolades and commendations. So those are just some reasons. But I want you to notice one other thing that 1 Peter 3:15 says. He says, always be prepared to give an answer to everyone who asks you to give the reason for the hope that you have, but do this with gentleness and respect. I have a high school friend that walked away from the faith. He was raised in a Christian environment, walked away from the faith. And he talks about how his family are always sending him books and links to podcasts, and because they want him to believe, and they're like, well, this book will convince him, this podcast will convince him. And I get the nature, I get the intention, I get the desire behind that, but I think maybe it's more valuable that he knows why they believe, not why some random author believes, or why a random podcaster believes, but why do you believe? And you're like, well, my reasons aren't very good. I haven't really thought about it. Well, think about it. I don't really know. I haven't been able to articulate it. Well, spend a little time articulating it. But you don't, again, gentleness and respect. Gentleness and respect. We want to convince people. We really do. I do. But people don't want to be convinced. They might be interested and they might care about why we believe, but they don't want to have arguments shoved down their throat. You're wrong. You're dumb. You can't see the truth. They want to know why we're convinced. And so I think it's important for us to know. Ask ourselves these questions. Why do you believe? What do you believe? What questions do you have? What are you doing about it? Not to hide or sweep doubt under the rug, but to explore it and to bring it into the light and say, what do I think? What are some good, compelling answers to these questions that I have that's swirling around in my mind? The only way for Hamlet to learn about Shakespeare is for the author to write himself into the story, for the author to give us an opportunity to discover who they are. And I think we're fortunate to live in a world where we are claiming that the author did write himself into the story, and we do have access to it. I don't think that there's one path toward belief in God. My story, reasons that matter to me are going to be different than yours. But I did want to wrap up just with this one quick story about a missionary by the name of John Patton. I have a picture of him here. Isn't that the best beard that you've ever seen? Just such a good beard. He just looks like somebody that I would be like, tell me why you believe and I want to know. He was a missionary to the New Hebrides. This is the Republic of Vanuatu now. It's a little tiny archipelago of islands. And he was very young. He and his pregnant wife arrived on this island, and some of you are like, yeah, I bet he dragged his pregnant wife. She probably hated that, and she might have. I don't know. I was trying to find out what his wife thought about all this, but there wasn't any. In his autobiography, he didn't mention that, which is too bad. But this was an island of cannibals. That's a fun place to spend your newly married years. I guess it probably gives you a little perspective on some of the, the conflicts that we have in marriage when you're fighting off cannibals who want to nibble on your arm and like see how that goes. But the truth of the matter is, 3 months after getting there, his wife died in childbirth, and he lost her. And then about a week after that, the son she birthed also passed away. And according to his autobiography, you can find it online, incredible story. He actually had to guard the grave because locals wanted to dig it up and taste what these strange European people tasted like. And he had to guard it. And eventually he spent enough time on the island that they gained some sort of like begrudging respect for him and started leaving him alone. But he didn't have any success getting him to believe. I mean, where do you start with a culture so different than yours? They did stop trying to eat him, which was good. But he decided that, man, there's no fresh water on this island. It's about a 3-square-mile island, no fresh water. So all their water came from collecting rainwater or from coconuts. And he thought, I'm going to dig a well. And in his autobiography, he's like, I didn't know anything about digging a well. I'm totally ignorant when it comes to this, but I'll give it a shot and see what happens. So he's out there digging a big hole, and the locals are like, what are you doing? He's like, I'm trying to dig a well. I'm going to get water. And the locals are, rain does not come from the ground, you dummy. That's exactly what they said. In fact, I have a quote from his autobiography. The old chief, that was the chief of the tribe there, grew more tender in his tones and cried, oh, Missy. Missy was their term, missionary. Oh, Missy, your head is gone wrong. You are losing something, or you would not talk wild like that. Do not let our people hear you talking about going down into the earth for rain, or they will never listen to your word or believe you again. But he's already started. He's digging. He's digging. He's digging. And he works for weeks and weeks and weeks, and they come and watch him, and they're just convinced this guy's nuts. And he's starting to wonder if he's nuts. And he finally gets about 30 meters deep, and he finally breaks through, and he gets yelled, and he's excited. He gets a bucket. He gets some guys to help him lift the bucket up to the top, and he's having them taste this muddy water. And they're like, oh, rain from the ground. They can't believe it. They can't believe it. The chief actually asks if he can address the crowd. You know, the whole island's gathered to see this phenomenon. And so they're all gathered there, and the chief says this. This is recorded by John Patton. The chief says, listen to my words. Since Missy came here, he's talked about many strange things we could not understand, and we said regarding many of them that they must be lies. We thought the strangest was about sinking through the earth to get rain, we said to each other, this man's head is turned. All the powers of the world could not have forced us to believe that rain could be given from the depths of the earth. If we had not seen it with our eyes, felt it, and tasted it, but the water was there all the same. We laughed at other things which the Missi told us because we could not see them. From this day, I believe all that he tells us about his God is true. Someday, our eyes will see it, for today we have seen the rain from the earth. Now, that wouldn't do it for us. We'd be like, good job, you dug a well, nice work. But it worked for them, and I believe God is interested in finding out what it is for us. But our hearts have to be open and care and receptive and be interested in these things. I think that's true. I'm more than happy to talk about it with anybody that doesn't believe, more than happy. But I can't imagine anything I say will convince anybody, but I'm sure willing to sit down and have a conversation about it with gentleness and respect. But I think that's something that we need to explore, the essence of our faith, the fundamentals, the foundation of our faith. What do we believe? Why do we believe it? What questions do we have? What are we doing about it?